You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Recent labor statistics indicate the unemployment rate in this country has jumped to 6.7%, a 15-year high. But in the culinary world, the employment rate is increasing, and it's expected to produce 2 million career opportunities in the next 10 years. Joining me now to discuss this trend are Dorothy Hamilton, founder and CEO of the French Culinary Institute, and Tom Colicchio, chef, owner of Kraft Restaurants and Witchcraft, and also the head judge on the very popular TV series Top Chef, which is broadcast Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on Bravo. And I'm very pleased to welcome the two of you back to the show.
Thank you, Leonard.
Dorothy, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates that there'll be nearly 10,000 new chef positions created over the next 10 years. How is that possible during this period of economic downturn?
Well, you could ask Tom. For the last 10 years, it's really been hard to get people, you know, in the kitchens. We've had a huge, huge labor shortage.
Yeah.
And now, we're kind of catching up. And just point—
Is it because people are looking for new careers since they've been losing their jobs?
No. I think that, you know, there are plenty of hotels opening up, and on average, there's probably, you know, 6 or 7 chefs in a hotel, probably 300, you know, food and beverage employees. I mean, I just opened in Atlanta and just hired an additional 120 employees for the restaurant in Atlanta. So restaurants are going to continue to open up, and hotels are going to continue to open up, and, you know, food service just keeps growing.
Case in point, end of September, this was after the Dow took its huge dip, after Lehman went out, we held a career fair. And we just said, how many restaurants are going to show up? 45 restaurants showed up. And a lot of those restaurants had multiple, you know, locations, thousands of jobs. And David Chang himself was sitting at the fair. I said, what are you doing here? You must have stacks of resumes from cooks. Absolutely not. We are looking for the best people. They came in.
Chang of Momofuku.
Of Momofuku, yeah. And who's probably the hottest, you know, restaurant right now in the city. And they were there still looking for people. This is a huge industry. I don't think you're going to see absorption anytime soon.
But haven't many restaurants reported that they're suffering from, you know,
without a doubt, I think
few people coming in for dinner. Is this affecting mostly the more expensive restaurants?
I think it is. I have 3 restaurants in New York at different price points, and our lower price restaurant Kraft Bar is very busy, where our highest price Kraft Steak is feeling a little bit more. I think we're feeling it more in New York. I mean, we're feeling a downturn more in New York because it actually started in the financial center in New York City, but also for employment reasons in New York. For years, if you were a young chef, you wanted to work in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, maybe Chicago. This was 30 years ago when I started cooking. Now, there are great restaurants in Cleveland and Cincinnati and all over. And so to be a cook and learn your trade, you don't necessarily have to work and, you know, spend the kind of rents to live in New York to learn.
The other thing is people aren't running into their kitchens to cook. If they're down, you know, watching their pocketbook, they're buying prepared foods and eating them at home. And you need chefs at Whole Foods gourmet foods. And even in the local deli, if they want to offer something at $7 per portion.
And it's interesting that the restaurant and hospitality industry is now one of the largest employers in the United States. Mm-hmm. 13.1 million people employed in it. That's a lot of people.
Actually, 50% of all mature women have worked at some point in a restaurant or in the hospitality.
Where do we apply for a bailout?
The immature women are still looking for jobs. Have you seen more applications for employment at your restaurants?
Not yet. I'm expecting that's going to happen probably in January. But I think we're going to see a lot of restaurants starting to close in January in the mm-hmm. city, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who's a restaurant broker. And he, you know, sent me an email recently with about. Usually, he would send me an email with four locations, had over 25 locations on it.
And it's interesting that a number of restaurants, rather high-end restaurants, have opened recently. They couldn't have known that this was going to happen when they started building the restaurants. But you have to wonder whether they can survive.
It's going to be tough.
Well, I think it's all about price point and having a menu that people want to eat.
Now, I remember the last time we went through something like this, and Jean-Georges opened a restaurant called Jojo, which was a low-priced restaurant. Now, Jojo's is an expensive restaurant. So is that what happens? You start off inexpensive, and then as the economy improves, you keep on raising your prices?
I think that's right. I would say 20 years ago when I was a chef at Mondrian, my food cost was about 30%. And in my restaurants now, the food cost is still 30%. I have $50 entrees on my menu now. Not because I'm making more money. Food costs more. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, if Jean-Georges started doing what he was doing at Jojo 20 years ago or so, maybe more than 20 years ago, just to keep pace, the items have to be more expensive. But I think you're going to see a lot of lower-priced restaurants opening up.
Well, I think there's another thing. I was talking to Danny Meyer, and he said, this is my fifth recession. And what happens, and he made a great analogy. He says, like a huge wind is going to blow through the town. And everybody who's marginal or not quite hitting it, they're going to go. Yep. And the strong, the best are going to be standing. And you know what?
In a way, it's pruning,
good.
There was a lot
of money, and there was a lot of restaurants out there charging a lot for not great food and not great service. And people are not going to put up with it. So I think the consumer, in the end, is going to win.
I think that's part of it. I agree. But also, I think restaurants are going to just prepare. Restaurateurs are going to just have to sort of deal with the fact that you're not going to make money this year.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to lose money, but we're not going to make
money
this year.
Actually, Tom, you know, at the school, we have a restaurant, Lake Cole, and our business was up 33% in October and 10% in November. And I think it's because we have a $40 five-course menu. And we have 25 from Zagat and a bib from Michelin. So it's good value, low cost. Sure. I think that's going to be the way to get through this.
One restaurant owner told me that during the bad times, a downtown restaurant did well because of Wall Street. I mean, the good times. But now he assumes that only the restaurants in Midtown where the tourists are going to go are going to do well. It's harder to get people to travel to those out-of-the-way places.
No, I don't believe that. I think people in New York are still going to go out to eat dinner. A lot of New Yorkers have small kitchens. They don't have time to cook. They're going to go out, but they're only going to go out to places where they find value. Value can be found at every price point. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're going to see.
Are you seeing more people applying for places at your school?
Double.
Wasn't there a time when cooking schools were easy to get into? Is that now no longer the case?
I think, yeah, I would agree with that. But truly, you know, I just had to reflect on this. To have in the last 8 weeks our inquiries double, and I'm saying from 500 to 1,000 people a week inquire about coming to the school, I was astounded. But when you think about it, this is a finance town. And if you've lost your job in finance, what are you going to do? Go look for another job in finance? I don't think so. So you're going to have to change your profession. And quite frankly, that's not odd for an American. And the average American doesn't change their job, changes their profession, their career, on an average 5 times in their lifetime. They'll wind up doing 5 very different things. So I think we're going to see a huge migration to places that have lots of jobs, and our industry does.
Well, there used to be Las Vegas.
There was a time when most chefs started off when they were very young, and but we've seen more and more people who were trained as lawyers and doctors and whatever else working as chefs or opening up restaurants. Because this is an area that people like who have a sense of hospitality like to go into?
Well, you know, I think our industry has always attracted a lot of career changers. I remember working at Quilted Giraffe back in the 80s. Half the kitchen were career changers.
And Barry Wine, the owner, was
Barry
a lawyer.
He was a lawyer, exactly. And I think we've always attracted that. I think Dorothy is saying the same thing. She's seen a lot of people come in, they're changing careers. You know, I think part of it is, and every time I get asked, you know, I'm interested in cooking, should I do it? My response is, before you go and go to school, just get into a restaurant first. Knock on somebody's door and say, I'm interested, can I spend some time? Because it's not for everybody. You know, you watch the TV show and it looks like a lot of fun. It's not like it's portrayed on TV at all. And it's a lot of hard work.
It is.
I'm sorry, Top Chef does not look like a lot of fun, especially if you're one of the losers. my guests are Tom Colicchio and And Dorothy Hamilton, we're talking about the fact that of all businesses, the restaurant business is really booming. How much staff does it take to run a restaurant like Kraft?
We have about 120 employees at Kraft.
And that goes from dishwashers up to, what do you have, executive chef, chef de cuisine, sous chef.
There's pastry chefs, there's managers, there's, you know, front waiters, back waiters, kitchen runners,
cleaners.
Hosts, cleaners, there's, yeah.
Well, when people come to your restaurant, to your school, do all of them want to be chefs? Is that
no.
None of them
is. You know, it is so huge. 25 years ago when I started the school, people came to be a chef. Today, it's amazing the jobs that are out there. There are many jobs in the magazine / journalism area, the blogging. TV Food Network just opened a huge other area, and we have so many graduates who are working over there in the studios. There are all these other TV shows. And the one great one I love, all these great super chefs like Tom Colicchio all have personal assistants. And I have so many graduates that are the personal assistant of Bobby Flay and Mario Batali. And, you know, it's this little network of assistants that know all of these jobs. Each one of these little empires spawn so many culinary industry jobs. And it's amazing. Food photography, food PR. It goes on and on. The books, the publishing.
Yeah, I think that way when you started, Tom.
No. When I started cooking, there were no opportunities. I never thought in a million years I'd write a book. There was certainly, unless you were Julia Child or Graham Kerr, you weren't on TV.
Mm-hmm.
No, this was not something that I thought of doing.
As I understand it, you taught yourself to cook with Jacques Pepin's cookbooks.
Yeah,
La Technique and books like that?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Well, Jacques Pepin teaches at the Culinary Institute.
Yeah.
Can we save tuition by simply reading his cookbooks?
No. I mean, I besides reading his cookbooks, when I said I learned from his book, his book La Technique was a picture book and it filled with a lot of techniques. And when I was a kid, I started cooking at home when I was 13 years old because I just loved something was attracted to it. And most likely I would have been diagnosed with ADD and I could never get through a recipe. I would have a hard time once I started cooking and laying things out. I just couldn't get through it. And so I thought about it. I said, well, somewhere in here, it's really not about the recipe. It's about technique and methods. And when I saw this book, La Technique, and Jacques Forward, he talked about how technique was so important. And the last thing he said was, don't think of this as a book. Think of it as an apprenticeship. And there's something just clicked. And, I would go and do the various different things. And not to make a dish. Go make consomme. There was no end point. It was just the idea of learn to make a consomme. Learn knife skills. I remember one picture. It was bizarre. It was how to skin a rabbit.
Oh my!
I figured, when would I ever have to use this? I was in France one day doing a stage, and someone handed me a rabbit and said, "Ha ha, clean this." And I was like, "I know how to do this."
Well, Jacques does a demonstration now in which he talks about technique as the key. He says it's not about cooking; it's about technique.
That's right.
So, is that what you're teaching Culinary Institute?
The French cooking. Do you have to be French to do it? Do you have to use French products? Do you have to, what is, it's really about technique. They codify, just like in ballet, you don't think of French ballet companies, but the French are great at codifying, and they codified the dance movements. Well, it's the same thing with cooking. The French codified all the techniques.
Right.
And that's why, even if you're Italian or German, everybody studies French technique. It's like the classic ballet steps.
I tell people, I play guitar a little bit. And when I learned to play, years ago, I figured, I'll learn a few chords and I can play a few songs. I didn't know a thing about music. Same thing with cooking. If you have a bunch of recipes, you'll only know those recipes. It doesn't mean you can cook.
So when you are looking at what some of those candidates on Top Chef are doing, can you spot right away that one is not going to do well because he or she doesn't have good technique?
Usually you can tell, and usually that's their downfall, is they don't have technique. A lot of them have great ideas, and they don't have the technique to pull it off.
Tom, we have to take a little break. We'll come back, Dorothy. Tom Colicchio is chef owner of Kraft Restaurants and Witchcraft, also the head judge on Top Chef. And Dorothy Hamilton is the founder and CEO of the French Culinary Institute, although it says on the building International Culinary Institute these days. We'll continue our conversation after we take a little break. We're back with Dorothy Hamilton, founder and CEO of the French Culinary Institute, and Tom Colicchio, chef owner of Kraft Restaurants and Witchcraft, also the head judge on Top Chef, which is broadcast Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on Bravo. And you had a serious apprenticeship around town. You worked at Quilted Giraffe, you said. You worked at Raquel, which was Thomas Keller's last restaurant in New York, just a couple of blocks away from
where we are.
Mm-hmm. Now, a restaurant that failed for some reason. Then he went to California, and suddenly he was declared a genius at the French Laundry.
Suddenly, exactly.
Did he do anything differently?
No. You know, I was a sous chef at Raquel, and boy, that kitchen was just amazing, and it was so far ahead of its time. I mean, the one neat thing that Thomas does, and you know, obviously he's a wonderful chef and very, very focused, but he created an atmosphere in the kitchen that all we discussed was food. In a lot of kitchens, you walk in, they're talking about movies, and they're talking about whatever, sort of topic of the day. In his kitchen, the only thing that was discussed was food. And he would say, go downstairs, there's a bunch of stuff, bring it upstairs. You go downstairs, and we would start discussing. It was a discussion. Well, how about this? How about this? Well, I can do this with this pork, and who has a garnish? And so it was just this back and forth. It was just this wonderful, creative environment. But, you know, years back, I reflected because, you know, at times say, well, I've contributed so much to the menu. And years back, I'd look at it and say, it all happened because he created this environment. It was a wonderful time.
So he encouraged you to think about doing things creatively as well.
Yeah. And he got everybody involved.
So in the past, people learned how to cook by working in restaurants. You didn't go to cooking school, did you?
No, I didn't.
I'm not trying to say that not going to cooking school is a good idea, Dorothy.
Oh, no. Well, I have my own opinion on this.
Yeah, no. And what happened, I actually planned on going to Culinary Institute. And you had to work in two restaurants before they would accept you. And I started working. And fourth restaurant I worked in after several years was Quilted Giraffe, and they made me a sous chef after 4 months. And at that point, I decided not to go. That and the fact that I was, again, most likely would have been diagnosed with ADD, and I had a hard time. You know, I had this, you know, teachers would say, you have this incredible IQ. Why are you doing C work? And I wasn't a huge fan of school.
Well, the Quilted Giraffe produced so many top chefs. I wonder, was that the environment as well?
Actually, there's only three chefs that I know of that came out of Quilted that really went on to do anything, and that was Wayne Nish and David Kinch, who has a restaurant called Manresa in California.
Noel Comas wound up opening up one of the most popular bakeries.
Yes. Noel went on to do that. But that's really – there were a few other people, but it wasn't as much as, say, Gotham or Le Cirque French Laundry or other places. But no, there were a lot. But I think a lot of that had to do with career changes, too, though.
But if I could say something about the apprenticeship. Apprenticeship is wonderful, but it takes a long time. Mm-hmm. It takes years for you to get up to speed because you're working, and the chef isn't there to show you and hold your hand, and, you know, you'll be washing things for months.
Yeah.
Whereas in a school, the reason you go to a trade school, we're a trade school.
Yeah.
In 6 months, we've squashed everything you really need to know to be a good entry-level cook.
Yeah, and I think you hit on something there. And the only issue that I think a lot of chefs have with culinary schools, and I'm really happy to hear that you said you're an entry-level cook, because too many of these kids coming out of culinary school think they're chefs.
Mm-hmm. And at the age of 22, they're going to have their own restaurant.
That's exactly right.
Well, what we make them do is right when they're ready to graduate, they have to do one simple thing. Make an omelet for Andre Sultner.
Well,
it brings their head right down to the slice.
That part of the excitement of your place is that you have these master chefs teaching Andre Sultner of Lutèce fame, Alain Sayac and Jacques Torres of Le Cirque, Jacques Pepin of Howard Johnson.
They set the bar. You know, they're not there teaching in the classroom every day, but they are there demoing. And the great thing is students can have one-on-one conversations with them and really rub shoulders with these magnificent icons.
Yeah. I mean, I've spent some time at the school, and it's a wonderful environment to learn, but also your learning technique. And it's like anything. It's what you choose to do with it once you get out of school. And, you know, you have to be, I think, Dorothy, you know, you need to be very, very self-motivated to put yourself through an apprenticeship, but also to take the time. I mean, when I decided to put myself through an apprenticeship, I did here and in Europe. I gave myself 15 years before becoming a chef.
Was it important to learn all the classics before you started doing your own stuff?
Back then, there was more an emphasis on classics too.
Are you teaching coq au vin and that sort of thing?
Yes. Well, we're teaching all the classic technique and some regional food, but it's very modern food focused too. But I just wanted to say something. I think more than anything, we teach culture in our school. It's not about holding the knife. It's about how to act as a professional in the kitchen. And if I can go back to the very first Top Chef episode. It was the first or second show. There was you were in San Francisco. With Hubert Keller.
Hubert Keller.
And there was a very cocky contestant, and the way he answered the chef, Tom exploded, and said, "You don't talk to the chef like that."
Well, there was a whole lot of stuff that happened before that. He stuck his finger in a sauce and tasted it with his finger and put his finger back in the sauce, and the chef saw it and said, "Get out." You know, and he hit the roof and said, "Why? Everybody else does this." And he said, "Not in my kitchen." And then he started talking. And this was going on for about an hour before I finally just told the guy, like, "Just you're in the chef's kitchen. How dare you, like, treat him like this?"
There's two words in the kitchen. Yes, chef. And that's the culture. And that's so important to learn, as important as any technique.
A listener, John from Chelsea, says if this recession brings down commercial rents as it should, it might be the best thing that's happened to New York restaurants in 5 years. Before you go, I did want to ask you about something else. All of the places that supply the needy have been suffering recently. I know you're involved with one of them, Tom.
Right. Well, in New York, we're involved with Food Bank, New York Food Bank and City Harvest, and the shelves are bare. I did get involved with Cascade, and they have a pretty cool program. They teamed up with FITA. If you go to the website, cascadefeedsamerica.com. It's a simple thing to do. You click on the site, and they'll feed a hungry kid. They're going to feed 4 million kids this holiday season. So far, they've got up to about 3.7. No money's involved, absolutely nothing, but go in there, clicking on the site, and they'll feed a hungry kid. So if you have some time, go to check out cascadefeedsamerica.com, click on the icon there, and you'll feed a hungry kid. That simple.
Now, a couple of other listeners have sent in comments. One, Olaire from Valley Cottage in Rockland County says, if you're ready to deal with tremendous pressure, personality disorders, and scrubbing down hot stoves with wire brushes at midnight, this is a perfect career choice. Another says, you have to be fresh out of your $1 million finance job to be able to afford to work in the restaurant industry. Let's hope you save last year's super bonus. Why don't we talk about the reality of racking up a huge student loan debt in the thousands and end up working at minimum wage for years? The food industry is not unlike the sports industry. One in a million get a frying pan endorsement. Dorothy?
I don't. I think what you have to do is choose wisely. You have to invest in yourself. And when you get out, there's $10, $15 an hour jobs.
That's right.
But within 4 years, you could be a sous chef. Sous chefs make $50,000, $60,000. And in 7-8 years, the average executive chef in New York City makes $80,000 a year. Now, that's not spending 4 years of high tuitions. And, you know, as I say to some students, turkey in, turkey out. If you don't come with the idea of being disciplined, hardworking, you know, clean, and putting yourself in that position. But we just said there's a huge demand in this industry. And if you have the right stuff and you go to get the right training, in 2 or 3 years, you're going to be making a good salary.
Listen, there are people who have a calling, and some people are called to the hospitality industry. Some people are called to be teachers. If you graduate with a teaching degree, you're probably not going to make a lot of money either, and you're probably going to have a lot of student loans. Should we tell people not to become teachers?
It is interesting that it's called the hospitality industry because some of the nicest people I've ever met have been in this business. Maybe it attracts people who have a kind of a generosity spirit.
I say and tell my staff, to be successful in the business, we have to do one thing. And you can say, "Oh, make great food," or "You know, I have great service." No. Make people happy. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, you're successful.
Now, Paula from Brooklyn asks, "Will Top Chef ever give a chance to experienced older chefs? They have dreams too." She writes, "I personally worked in the industry for over 20 years. Why not give the chefs who are in their 40s and 50s a chance to win the money?"
Well, we have someone on the show who's 36. We had a woman on first season who was in her 40s. But there's also something that we're in pre-production called Top Chef Masters. And I think you'll see some familiar faces competing as opposed to judging. That could be a lot of fun. But no, anybody of any age can apply. And they try that. When they cast the show, they try to have a cross sort of.
Don't most restaurants fail quickly once they're opened? They say a success is a restaurant that signs a second lease. Do you teach entrepreneurship as well?
Actually, we have a restaurant management course that teaches the business. You come out with a business plan. And I got this from Cornell University professors. The failure rate of restaurants is no greater than the failure rate of any other small business.
Mm-hmm. Do you like being on television? You said that your first appearance on television with Regis and Kathy Lee was the worst experience of your life.
I did say that. That was a funny experience. I showed up late because I was told by these two stagehands who were really giving me a hard time. They said, yeah, show up at 8 o'clock. And I was supposed to be there at 6 o'clock for rehearsal, so I showed up and they gave me a hard time. When I started cooking, I never dreamed of being on TV. And once the opportunity was out there and I knew that the show wasn't about me and I was going to be able to mentor a lot of chefs and meet a lot of people I wouldn't meet, I kind of got comfortable with it. But the idea of being on TV was not the reason for doing it.
And, Dorothy, you've developed a TV career as well on PBS.
Yeah, well, Chef's Story that is still seen somewhere. And I had the pleasure. That was just total fun.
She made
done
me cry.
In 3 weeks. 3 weeks, and I got to interview spectacular people like Tom. It was just a joy. You don't call that work.
You know, I do a lot of interviews. That was such a wonderful interview. And Dorothy just found some stuff on me that I thought was long buried. Nothing bad, but just things that I haven't heard in ages. And at one point, it brought a tear to my eye. I mean, I was really choked up. It was quite moving.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I think it's inspirational that you really did work at Burger King.
I did.
And you were so honest. You're honest about your life. Yeah. And where you come from is a real place. Mm-hmm. And you haven't lost that realness. If you know Tom, he's just a wonderful human being and man, and he's down to earth, even though he is a top chef.
I think we're going to have to leave it there before I start
Thank
crying.
You, Dorothy.
Dorothy Hamilton is founder and CEO of the French Culinary Institute. Tom Colicchio is the chef owner of Craft Restaurants and Witchcraft and the head judge on Top Chef. You can watch him on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. on Bravo. Your show is no longer on Channel 13?
Well, it's on PBS all over the country, and they have the right to show it when they want.
You can get it on DVD, no?
Oh, yes. You can go to www.chefstory.com.
There you go.
And we should also point out that Cascade, the organization you were talking about, has a website, cascadeclean.com.
Well, cascadefeedsamerica.com will get you there, too.
Okay. Thank you both so much for being with
us. Thank you.